You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
Last week, the ACT Party announced a policy for the upcoming election that would involve reducing the number of government ministries. Currently, 78 portfolios are shared across 28 ministers, a number which ACT Party leader David Seymour says can be cut down to 18. While the ACT Party says this policy would streamline government, making things more efficient and generating savings, it's unclear what these savings would deliver for the public. Also last week, Auckland Mayor Wayne Brown released a series of interviews with MPs from various political parties. In each of these interviews, the Mayor discussed the state of the City of Auckland and what each political party can offer Aucklanders. Out of each party in Parliament, ACT and Te Pāti Māori were the only two to refuse an interview. For this week's catch-up with the ACT Party, Simon Court, I asked about each of these issues, beginning with the proposal to cut government departments.
I want to start off today with the proposal from the ACT Party to reduce the number of ministries. ACT has been arguing for a smaller government for some time. What exactly would this smaller government look like, and would it be able to deliver the same things in ACT's view that the government currently delivers?
Indeed, it would. ACT's view is that a government should do fewer things, but do them properly. At the moment, big problems get split across too many agencies, whether that's housing, infrastructure, crime, welfare dependency. Everyone has a piece of work on them. There's so many ministries and ministers, but no one clearly owns the problem or the result. And so what that means from an agency point of view is expensive, slow, and frustrating, if you're a voter or a member of the public, really frustrating how long it takes for governments to get things done, or maybe just fail to get things done. ACT wants to bring our current 43 departments, 78 portfolios and 28 ministers into 19 departments instead of 43, 18 ministers instead of 28. And that's going to cut out a lot of duplication across head offices and comms and HR and finance teams, all these extra chief executives getting paid, some cases twice as much as a cabinet minister or the prime minister, and actually make it much clearer which ministry, which chief executive and which minister is responsible for getting things done.
Yeah, it's a big thing here, a big change that would be proposed, and there's a lot of jobs that would be cut if these changes were to go through. One thing that some people have raised concern over is, especially in health these last couple of years, we've seen some underinvestment leading into outages across the digital communication system, and we've seen that cybersecurity issues. So we've seen that potentially back office cuts can create problems for frontline services. Is this a worry? Is ACT confident that changes like this wouldn't affect the frontline at all?
Look, we're absolutely clear that we want the government to perform better and we want it to deliver better for New Zealanders. So, of course, you know, when you are looking at functions of an organisation and working out where those functions should be placed and how they should be funded and prioritised, it's important not to let things slip. But let's be clear, under the previous government, they ran essentially a restructuring of the health system during a global pandemic. They spent $1 billion on the restructure, and at the end of it, they had a spreadsheet to run a $28 billion organisation. So, of course, yeah, if you don't do it properly, things will slip through the cracks. But we're a totally different government. You know, my background is in civil engineering, project management. I've been through a number of organisational restructures myself. You know, it's different project teams. Work out of a project and we need to then reallocate people's resources and time into new projects. Now, that's what businesses do every day, and yet government doesn't do it. All that happens is a new problem gets discovered, a new agency, department, minister, chief executive get created for it, and the problem still doesn't get solved. ACT has a different approach, and we're confident we can retain frontline services. Now, there's no proposal to cut teachers, police, nurses, for example. This is about making sure we've identified the right functions, allocated them into the right business unit or department, and a minister responsible for delivering that.
Is there a worry around concentration of power? As ministries get smaller, obviously, there's more responsibilities on the minister responsible. Is there a worry of, you know, maybe concentrating power in the hands of a smaller and smaller group of people?
Well, remember that power derives from the voters, and from the legislation that Parliament passes. Power does not derive from a minister, except in very limited circumstances where ministers have the power to override or direct. So not concerned at all. In fact, what we're aiming for is greater accountability and delivering on what governments get elected to deliver. Because at the moment, if you're, say, appointed, I don't know, the Minister for Building and Construction, like my colleague Chris Pink is, when it comes to setting building standards or consumer safety standards for building products, his part of MBE, which has about 20 ministers, I understand, responsible for different bits of it, his part of it only deals with a few building products, and yet consumer safety and some of the other standards are under the Minister of Consumer Affairs and over in the Commerce Commission. Unless we can actually consolidate government's effort to respond to New Zealanders' needs, all we're going to do is grow government, make it more expensive, and solve fewer problems. And that's not going to help New Zealand in the long run.
And one of the big things on the other side is, I guess, where the money is going. We've seen this government as well make a lot of cuts, and a lot of these cuts were advertised as ways to save the government money, but also to pass on some of those benefits to members of the public. However, the cost of living hasn't really gone down that much. Inflation has dropped, but that's not been a material impact on people's wallets. Where would this money go from any of the savings Act is looking to make here?
Well, let me just address your comments straight up. This government has reduced spending, and as a result of government spending less and higher quality spending actually delivering stuff like infrastructure, frontline services, and allowing people to keep more of what they earn, what that means is the government's share of spending in the economy has been less than it would have been under the previous government. And so you're right, interest rates have come down, because that is the Reserve Bank responding to, essentially, the heat being taken out of the economy. Now, when interest rates come down, that means that mortgage payers pay less, and it means that renters who would otherwise have been subject to higher rents because their landlord's mortgage interest rates have gone up are paying the same, or in some cases, less than they would otherwise. So there has been a material impact, positive impact on the cost of living from the government's actions. Now, we are not in control of other things, like, you know, the cost of imported fuel, for example, which has had a major impact on household budgets. But there are other things that we've done, you know, such as, you know, providing $50 a week for households that qualify for the fuel compensation payment. So, look, we're in a long game here, turning this economy around. It's taken decades from our previous peak productivity back in the early 2000s, when New Zealand was, you know, working really hard but producing a lot of good results and earning good money for it, to now where we're actually working harder and producing less per person than we were 20 years ago. We're in a turnaround situation. This is hard work.
I want to address one of those examples you raised. You said that rents haven't gone up as a result of this government doing something. I understand that is obviously a positive benefit for many people, anyone paying rent, myself included, but that's not a benefit. That's just a negative thing not happening. We still see unemployment rates extremely high. Youth unemployment has hit its like all-time peak multiple times during this government's term. We're still seeing the cost of groceries really high. We're still seeing wages remain relatively similar. Is this money and is this proposal from ACT going to change any of those things?
Look, what ACT wants to do by shrinking the size of government, reducing the cost of government, is mean that people like you, students who are studying for a degree or qualification going into the workforce, actually are facing less cost. Because, you know, while you said your rent not going up is not a benefit, I tell you what, if the previous government was still in, and remember, house prices increased 40% under the previous Labor government, 40%. There are people who were priced out of the market and some who feel they can never get back on the property ladder. Look, by reducing government spending, getting interest costs down, you know, reducing costs on landlords, that is having a positive impact. Those are costs that people like yourself and other renters are avoiding. And what that means is you can think about saving money for the next thing that you need, whether it's a car, whether it's to get into a better flat, or, you know, really important things, like a home, having kids. So these things take time, but the structural settings in the economy and for government, if we get them right, it means we're setting New Zealanders up for a much wealthier and healthier future.
But the things you're saying here, again, Simon, are costs not going up. People in the public, members of the public, who are facing extremely high grocery prices right now, extremely high cost of living right now, and do not have wages that are proportional to that, want either prices to go down or wages to go up. And you haven't said anything here that is indicating that either of those things would happen. Can you promise that prices of anything would go down instead of just not going up, or that wages would go up relative to any price increases?
Look, the government is not in the business of controlling prices. That is not possible. But what we can do is set the economic conditions so that your wages do increase faster than the cost of living. And the only way to do that is to increase productivity. That is the amount of output that you produce per hour of work. Like I said, around 20 years ago, New Zealanders were producing more per hour worked than we are now. There's a reason for that. It's because government has increased the size of the economy. Remember, government is a cost on the economy. Government is not a benefit to the economy. Red tape, regulation, the Resource Management Act, the fact that we now need 40,000 consents a year instead of the 5,000 to 10,000 we needed in the 1990s, none of that adds to our welfare as a nation. So there's a lot of work we're doing to cut red tape, improve productivity, and make sure that when you do go into the workforce and you're embarking on a career, that your employer can afford to give you decent pay rises because they're making more profit. That only comes when a government sets the structural settings that allow businesses to grow, invest in land and buildings, hire people, train them, and invest in that human capital, which is what New Zealand needs right now.
Recently, the Mayor, Wayne Brown, posted a series of interviews with multiple political parties or MPs from political parties. ACT was one of the political parties that refused to do one of these interviews. Is there any reason for that?
Well, Aucklanders don't need Wayne Brown spending council money on flash TikToks while hiking rates by almost 8%. So we're not wasting time on any TikToks with Wayne Brown. I've been very clear in my communication with Wayne Brown that he should be taking this opportunity while faced with additional costs from things like the City Rail Link to actually look at some of the wasteful spending, like these ridiculous compost bins that they have a fleet of trucks driving around the city to collect. You know, barely 30% of households would put these things out on a regular basis. Total waste of money. And then you think about, what else could we do for Auckland? Well, ACT would abolish the Minister for Auckland. It's like a mascot portfolio that takes resources away from the important functions of government. Aucklanders complain about housing, transport, infrastructure, their council performance. And so the government having a standalone Auckland portfolio gives the appearance of doing something without fixing anything. So the real work, and that's work I'm involved in and leading some aspects of, is resource management reform, getting rid of this red tape so we need to apply for fewer consents, and infrastructure funding so that we can actually get the infrastructure built that delivers services where people need it, and so we can build more houses. If Wayne Brown focused on that instead of TikToks, Aucklanders might be more satisfied with his performance.
Bed levies, another big thing. The ACT Party has been opposed to the bed levy, and as far as I can tell, is the only party that is actively opposed to the bed levy in Auckland. Wayne Brown says, and many other councillors say, that it'll improve funding for arts and culture in the city. Hotel operators say that they're also keen to have it. It seems that everyone is supportive of this policy, except for the ACT Party. Why is that?
Well, you'll notice that the coalition government hasn't introduced a bed levy, so you could probably expand, which parties in government are not keen on a bed levy to the government. But ACT is very clear, and I'm proud that we've managed to stop that so far. We do not need new taxes. Councils like Auckland collects over $3.5 billion a year in revenue. If they can't find cuts of say a couple of tens of millions or hundreds of millions to fund infrastructure, investment in arts and culture and events, what on earth is the central government supposed to do? These people have a responsibility to their city. We have countless cruise ships arrive, discharging thousands of people at a time. We do have major events here. We've got Eden Park. These guys couldn't even get out of bed to find some money to support the America's Cup style, you know, AC42 event, and they expected the government to pick up the tab for it. They're not serious people, so there will be no bed tax if acts in government. But what we have done is we've actually taken $400 million of GST revenue in this budget, and we've put it aside for infrastructure. So the councils like Auckland who complain they don't have enough money to spend for infrastructure, if they consent more houses, they can then apply for a proportion of that $400 million fund based on the number of houses they consent. That is what ACT is focused on. But these councils need to get real. Instead of demanding more taxes, what they should be doing is looking to transfer money from wasteful things like a stupid compost bin collection at the side of the road, in which costs tens of millions of dollars a year, into something that Aucklanders actually need, you know, like infrastructure, events funding, you know, whatever it is, it's actually going to make the city a better place to live.
I want to address a bit of that. You said that Sale GP, you mentioned that the council should have paid the other half of it that the government committed to paying and then pulled out of. That seems a bit unfair on Auckland Council, especially because central government has way more access to revenue, has way more money on its hands than Auckland Council, and had already agreed to pay half of it. I mean, that's a little bit unreasonable.
Look, the government has tough choices to make, and you know, when it comes to funding events that largely benefit one region or one city, that should sit with that city or region. But let's be clear. Now, Auckland Council raises $3.5 billion a year in revenue, and they have choices. And you can't be asking taxpayers in places like Invercargill or Kaitaia to pay for a sailing race in Auckland. That doesn't make any sense at all. Now, Wayne Brown has a job to do. That's fixing Auckland. That's what he campaigned on. I'd like to see him actually have a go at it rather than wasting time on TikToks and flaming politicians.
Hang on, Simon. I'd just like to address something you said there. You can't expect taxpayers in Invercargill or Kaitaia to pay for stuff in Auckland. Can we also say the same the other way around? Auckland generates the most revenue in this country. Can we expect taxpayers in Auckland to be paying for stuff in Invercargill and Kaitaia?
When it's a local event, local infrastructure, it should be funded by the users as far as practical. That's exposition. And in fact, the work I'm doing on the Infrastructure Funding and Financing Act reinforces that. If there is infrastructure that's needed, say in a place like Invercargill, to support growth and development there, then it makes perfect sense for those who benefit from the infrastructure, landowners, property owners.
But like roads of national significance, for example, is greatly paid for by Auckland taxpayers, and yet many of the benefits won't be seen at all.
Well, if you think about the connections between Auckland and Northland that establish a corridor for business, then, of course, there will be benefits for Auckland. If you think about extensions to the Waikato Expressway that can better connect Auckland with the rest of the country, of course there are going to be major benefits for Auckland. You only need to talk to Port of Auckland or the big transport companies who would confirm that.
And what about, you know, hospital developments in the South Island, big infrastructure spending there? I mean, the government spends money all the time on parts of the country that aren't Auckland. The government spends money all the time on things in Wellington. I'm not arguing that this is wrong, but I'm arguing that perhaps we should think about these things differently, that we shouldn't just be expecting people in a region to pay for that region, especially when they might need things that are more expensive than what they can pay for.
You challenged me on Sale GP. $6 million. If Auckland Council can't find $6 million in a $3.5 billion budget, they're not serious people. But when it comes to levelling up health infrastructure around the country, for decades, there have been places around New Zealand where if you didn't live in the right postcode, you're not going to get reasonable and timely access to things like cancer treatment. Or if you live in a place like Queenstown, which is apparently, you know, one of the fastest growing regions of New Zealand, you don't even have a hospital. You've got a three-bedroom house which is supposed to treat, you know, a city of what will be growing to 35,000-40,000 people, you know, in the next little while. So I think we have to be realistic. Central government has a role to play: health, education, defence, building major infrastructure that links cities and encourages economic growth makes sense. But, you know, when it comes to events, for example, and culture in places like Auckland or Invercargill, which I note is just is spending over $70 million on a new museum, and good on them if that's what they think is going to attract people to their city. A lot of these things should be and must be locally funded. That involves tough choices for mayors like Wayne Brown.
That was the ACT Party's Simon Court speaking to me about a policy to reduce the number of government ministries and interviews the ACT Party declined with Auckland Mayor Wayne Brown.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.